All right. Now, this is a mic test. I don't know about you, but I'm testing my mic.
Want me to do a intro for us?
You're listening to Blue Yonder with your hosts, Jim Jones, and introducing Aaron Hubbard.
Everybody, welcome to episode 58 of Blue Yonder. I'm Jim Jones.
And I'm Aaron Hubbard.
You can find us at baldmove.com. We have another fantastic show. I don't know about you, but I am pumped, hyped for this show.
Midway through a steroid cycle.
And sitting on the toilet. We're going to be talking about how to succeed in IT without really trying.
That's how I made it.
That's how I made it, too. We're also going to be talking about geek anti-intellectualism.
Ooh.
But, of course, we always start
stop
off
with... Stop with the smart talk, man.
The bullshit. Okay, let's stop with it. Let's go into bullshit.
Oh, we're going to go right into the retardation.
Yeah, we'll start off by saying...
You want a mainline on the retardation? You hit up our site, FAQ. Baldmove.com. There's a link at the top says FAQ. It's not even a FAQ. That's how retarded it is. It's actually... There's a couple of... questions we've been asked.
See, I always call these FAQs.
FAQs?
Yeah, baldmove.com/FAQ.
Yeah, FAQ, listener. it's a collection of, I'd like to call it Bald Move lore. And you can, there's like a Bald Move site and or a FAQ and
Bald
there's
Move
a,
page,
a Blue Yonder.
Page. Yep.
If you want to know what the hell we're talking about, we're talking about Batman Can't Grow Corn. If you want to know what we're talking about when we talk about our top seven lists, all those inside jokes, go there. And we're going to keep that as a chronology. As a ever building lore, as a as a Tolkienian Silmarillion.
Yeah, baldmove.com/Silmarillion is totally different. Don't
no,
go
yeah.
there.
Right.
Don't go there. What about you've got some? I see you've got some other bullshit. You've got plenty of other bullshit.
All right, I got some here. I have resisted the allure of this game for a long time, but Chrome. Because we talked about this back in one cast, how you were annoyed that Chrome was pushing his app store. Well, I noticed that they are giving Angry Birds away for free.
Ooh.
And I couldn't resist its siren call. I had to get in there and see what everybody's talking about.
Sure.
And I'm addicted to this fucking game.
No, you're a dick, all right.
What? Like, it's my now bejeweled type on the couch. I'm just kind of dicking around watching TV. I'm playing this game.
Yeah.
Is Angry Birds the best game since Tetris? Now, I know...
Now, that is a bald move.
I don't want to say that it's the best video game or anything, but I'm talking about, like, the way Tetris was a pure game in the sense that it had simple mechanics, it was accessible, your mom, your dad, your sister, everybody wanted to play it, especially your sister.
Especially my mom. My mom loves Tetris.
Is Angry Birds the best game of its type? A pure, because it's basically pure physics. You pull the bird back on a little slingshot, you release it into the Fortress of Pigs, and chaos ensues.
I don't think this is a new type of game. I mean, if you're looking at stuff like Worms, it's basically the same principle. It's all about physics. Like, it's putting a certain amount of energy into the shot and letting it...
Now, you can't talk about Worms without talking about Scorched Earth.
Yeah, sure.
It's an artillery game. This is different in that, number one, it's not like, you know, multiplayer, player versus player. But it's also, I think it's even more pure because instead of, you know, entering angles and shot powers, you actually have physical control over the slingshot. How far you pull the bird back and when you release it, that's the angle it's going to take. And you got the different type of, you know, construction materials. There's glass, there's wood, there's stone that these pigs build their houses out of. And you got different birds to attack different types.
Those fucking pigs. They need to learn to build their houses out of bricks. Didn't they learn anything
they learned
from the
nothing.
Goddamn wolf?
Obviously not. But, but they, I mean, the other thing is that these... Like, the later stages are damn near Rube Goldbergian devices, where you've got to ricochet birds off and do them at the precise order, and you also get rewarded by using fewer birds rather than all your birds. You get bonus points for the ones left over.
I got a couple birds for you.
Do you? Yeah. One on each hand?
Yeah.
I'm just saying that it's a fantastic game. Now, you've not played it.
I've never played this.
Defend this premise. It's the most popular game in the world right now.
It doesn't interest me.
Why? I just...
Because,
I'm
okay,
a good,
I can tell
would
you why.
Would you agree with the fact that I'm a good friend of yours?
Man, don't push your luck.
All right, all right.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
okay,
a qualified yes.
I mean, 68 weeks in, and I see you every week. Yeah, I'd say
The axe getting a little thin. Would you say that I've got reasonable judgment on pop culture and games?
Sure, sure.
I'm telling you that this is the most fun I've had as a pure game experience since Tetris, and you're not intrigued. Why?
I don't buy the fun. I just don't see how it's... More here's what I have. I have Bejeweled, right?
You have Bejeweled. Bejeweled is your
Bejeweled
crack.
Is, yes,
it's your heroin.
Bejeweled
it's your everything.
Is my couch game, like you were saying. While you're sitting there doing nothing, Bejeweled fills that slot for me.
All right.
And I've played over 400 hours of Bejeweled, according to my iPhone. Which is, I know, obscene.
Uh-huh.
So I have that part of my life filled up with something else. I don't need Angry Birds. Hmm. I'm sure Angry Birds is great. I'm sure it is, but I just don't need it.
All right.
I've got heroin instead of meth.
It's a free game. Just play for 5 minutes. That's all I ask.
I'll try it. I've seen it played.
In Chrome on your Apple Mac thing and or your iPhone. Can't you get a Chrome for iPhone? No. All right.
No.
It's pretty fun. I'm just saying you ought to try it. And it's a free download if you got Chrome. Open a new blank tab. It's right there in your face. The other thing I want to talk about is I got Infamous 2. We are big fans of the original Infamous.
I liked it a lot.
It's like probably the most fun open sandbox type game that I've played. Infamous 2 is awesome for this reason, because I thought Infamous was kind of tedious until I got the rail grinding power.
Levitation
abilities.
That replenishes your... you're just saying as far as
just
moving
for getting
around
the goddamn city.
Yeah.
Well, you start off the game with levitation and rail grinding.
Nice. Yeah, that makes it way better.
You've got a fully powered, like, what do they call that? Atomic drop or the electroshock drop where you can drop off and you like detonate like a TNT explosion.
Mm-hmm,
and you've got fully powered up grenades and a decent power of shock ability.
So you're basically like
an
upgraded melee. First game.
You don't have the... calling down the lightning, the helix storm.
Sure.
You don't have like the higher level electrical powers where it changes off of people and stuff like that. You don't have the missile. But yeah, you basically start off fairly powerful, and you've got a much higher upgraded melee attack because you've got the amplifier. You've seen it, and it looks like an electrical tuning fork that you beat the shit out of people with.
Okay.
So just getting around the city is a lot more fun. I'm almost having as much fun as I did at the very beginning of the game. Just going in, like, you can stop random muggings. And the bad guy, this takes place in, like, a post-Katrina New Orleans called New Maria.
Really?
It's a southern town on a bayou. It is very much New Orleans.
Hmm, yeah.
And they even talked about post-hurricane flooding and, like, some of the cutscenes and stuff. The bad guys are these fucking inbred rednecks, and they talk like it, and it's so much fun to drop in a crowd of these, you got pretty mouth, boy, motherfuckers, and lay down the law.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's so satisfying. I'm loving it.
It'd be fun to call down some lightning on him, man.
Oh, I wish I had that power.
Yeah, when you get it, man.
So I'm like an hour or two in the game, and I'm loving it. It's really good. I got to recommend. If you liked Infamous at all, it's basically... more of Infamous.
Awesome.
And they got this really cool thing where you can do custom mission types, or you can design a mission, publish it to the internet, and now like all the random encounters are basically, you can choose whether they're like in-game scripted or something off the internet. You can agree to that.
Yeah.
And like, I'm really happy with like how varied the side quests are.
I want to say, was it Staffa who was mentioning in our forums that all the user-created missions right now are pretty much crap because they're all brand new.
I don't know, because I got into it like a week after the game release, and I haven't played one that's... I've only played one or two, and it's like, because I've been sticking to the plot-forwarding missions.
Sure.
And there's a lot
So do these just pop up while you're playing the game, or is
just
there a special
like,
menu?
Just like... Well, the first time it's offered to you, you have to agree to some sort of like, hey, this is offline content.
Yeah.
We don't control the experience. If someone's...
You're going to see a lot of penises.
If you're forced to rape a person, then...
Oh, God.
you know, we're not responsible, but yeah, kind of something like that. Kind of similar to, like, you know, online interactions are not approved by the ESRB.
Yeah, but the missions are seamlessly integrated into the game.
They're just like before. We'd have there's good, there's evil, there's neutral.
Huh. Yeah.
The other thing is the game is much more exacting on the karma. Like, if you injure a civilian during your brawl, it's a karmic hit.
Hmm.
Whereas before, the game seemed to be a lot more looser to, like,
as long as you didn't kill anybody.
Yeah, collateral damage. The other thing is, so I'm playing the game as good, but there's this one side mission. You walk across, you know, those dudes like the drum on 5 gallon buckets for money.
Sure, why not?
Like, you're going by this one dude, and like Zeke, you're kind of like the fat Elvis sidekick.
Yeah, yeah.
Says, hey man, I heard one of them drummers. It's like, I hate them guys. Can you like beat them up anytime you see one? And it becomes a recurring evil mission.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you see one of these, or you come within audio range of these drummers, it appears as like a red music note on your map. And if you go and beat the shit out of them, it gives you evil karma.
Nice.
I'm beating the shit out of... I'm playing as a good guy that beats the shit out of every drummer in New Maria.
Nice.
Because I can't stand them sons of bitches. And sure. My thing is, like, if they just show up on my map, they get a free pass. But if I see them, if they cross my visual path, I am regulating.
Awesome.
Warren G style.
You need to create a user mission to just, like, play good and beat the shit out of all the
drummers. Seeing if it's possible. If I can get to the highest Paragon level by still
beating
dispensing rough street justice to the street drummers. Because the other thing is, like, the new, like, there's a very Batman Arkham Asylum vibe to the combat, because you can build up a combo.
Well, I was going to bring this back to the vigilantism that we talked about earlier. Yeah.
You can build up this combo, and then once you charge, hit triangle to release an ultra-devastating power. Mm-hmm. I find I'm saving the triangles for the drummers. They're sitting there with their sunglasses on, beating the hell out of this drum, and I just go up, boom! And end them. So yeah, I'm playing as a basically good guy that's against street drummers.
Sounds like you're having fun.
I'm having a blast. Any more bullshit? Because I got one more that I could possibly talk about.
No, I have no bullshit. So
all right,
bring it.
What's our all right? X-Men First Contact. I'm way too late to
First Class.
First Class.
Star Trek. First Contract. Star Trek.
You know,
First
where the
Class.
Borg come and invade the Marvel Universe?
They both have Patrick Stewart, so you get off the hook there.
It's very blurred. The line is very blurred.
But I thought he drew the line, didn't he?
It was
At least he told us where it was supposed to be drawn.
This far, no further. But we didn't respect that.
Not at all. But he broke his little shims too.
So anyway, X-Men First Class. I'm way too late to give a review. It's better than I expected. I'm waiting because I thought Thor and X-Men First Class were going to suck. And Green Lantern, and I thought Captain America was going to rule. So far, Thor, X-Men First Class, better than I expected.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still hoping that the Green Lantern is going to suck. I'm worried, though.
Why are you hoping that the Green Lantern will suck?
Because I don't like Ryan Reynolds.
Just to fulfill your prophecy?
Yeah.
Oh, Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm kind of worried that now maybe Captain America, because there can't be three superhero movies that are good.
I don't know. The
anyway,
so
I don't want to talk about anything about X-Men First Class except for this. This movie breaks the degrees of separation to Kevin Bacon wide open. Because you got a whole generation of new hot up-and-coming stars like, you know, Michael Fassbender or whatever. Fassbender.
Michael Aspender.
Aspender. He's the last Aspender. You got James McAvoy, Jennifer Lawrence. They're co-starring with Kevin Bacon.
Oh, it ties into everyone.
And, like, there's so many names in this movie and up-and-coming stars and people that star in, like, because now there's like two of the X-Men guys were from fucking Twilight, so that whole cast is being involved.
Dude, you realize
the degrees of separation this is like it's been blown wide open,
and not
there's
only
so many first degrees to Kevin Bacon now and new young hot talent.
That's what I'm saying, that 100 years from now people are still gonna have 6 degrees to Kevin Bacon.
If that.
Maybe a couple.
Every person on the planet is going to be a third degree separation from Bacon, if they're lucky.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, I wonder what the degree of separation for me is.
I wonder how far back in time you can go.
Because here's the thing. Like, I am first cousins with John Mellencamp. I'm not joking. I'm not bragging.
Where's your Mellencamp money? Come on.
I'm not bragging. I'm just saying that that's the crew. I guarantee that he has run. He has been in a film or a cameo somewhere with somebody. Yeah. I bet I'm less than 6 degrees separation from Bacon.
And which means I am
Ron
too.
Hubbard, which means, yeah, like if I'm five
on
degrees, you're 6 degrees.
Yeah.
And if you're a listener, you're no better. You're no worse than seven.
Yeah.
Hold your head up high, listeners. On that seventh degree.
I wonder if you can go all the way back to the beginning of film, the beginning of cinema, and connect.
And here's the thing.
Kevin Bacon.
How fucking old is Kevin Bacon? Because in this movie, he starts off playing an older guy. And I'm like, finally, the man's going to act his age. But then they, like, as they start off in the 40s during World War II, they jump towards the 60s, and he looks like a 30-year-old. When is this man going to fucking age?
Never. Never.
I'm telling you, like, we could be playing this game, as you said, 100 years from now.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Easily. He might still be alive 100 years from now to act in more movies.
So that exhausts 100% of my bullshit.
All right, let's cut the bullshit. Let's get to the meat.
All right, cut that meat.
Let's cut the meat now.
Is it your meat or my meat?
I'm glad we're not calling this cheese. let's go with your meat first, because since I announced it first.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So I read an article, interesting one, an article on InfoWorld. Mm. I try to stay off InfoWorld, but this was an interesting one. It's called How to Succeed in IT Without Really Trying.
Ooh.
And he basically said there's two ways to be good and well-paid in IT. One is to actually know your shit and to be the IT all-conquering ninja that can, you know, go around and fix the problem instantaneously and handle your business and carry everybody and be Hogan and all the motherfucking heroes, too. The other is to be very mediocre, deferring to your smarter types, calling in consultants, basically, you know, doing just enough, answering a couple emails, doing some troubleshooting, just doing just enough that people think you're doing your job but not actually being successful at it. And he's like, if you do the first path, you will have more and more and more and more and more things dumped on you until you basically your back breaks. Huh. And if you do the second path, your workload will never increase because you're actually not doing any useful work other than facilitating other people that are smarter than you doing your work. And I started thinking that this is actually kind of true to my experience because I've been on both ends. I've been an hourly worker or a salaried worker at a shop or at a business that's not an IT business. And I've been a, you know, hired gun consultant at a body shop. And I kind of got that feeling that when I walked in as a consultant at some of these places that the people that were running the shop that I was consulting for had no freaking clue what they were doing. They knew to dial up this consulting agency and bring them in and have them set up something and they could maybe maintain or do tier one type support.
Hmm. Otherwise, why would you need a consulting company?
But yeah. So like, what do you think of that?
I mean, I feel like I go through phases with this where I do my goddamn best.
Right.
At my job, and I can get tons and tons of stuff done, but the work is endless, right? I mean, there's always something more to do, so it's not like you can ever finish it. And then I go through phases where it's like off a little bit, and the amount of work is still the same. Not my output, but the input of work is still the same,
right.
You know? So, I mean, I can see why a lot of people would slack off. I think it comes down to kind of like a personal pride thing almost, where I don't want to feel like I'm a slacker.
Right.
Usually.
Right.
Sometimes I don't care.
Right.
But most of the time I want to feel like I'm providing value or doing a lot of work, getting things done. And I feel like most people should feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of against what he's saying here. I don't think it might pay in the terms of, okay, you're not going to lose your job. You're not going to get paid less than the guy who's doing tons and tons of work at a really high efficiency. But personally, I want to be doing the best work I can most of the time.
All right. Well, to illustrate the pitfall that you can fall in as the, like, the, because I always consider myself like a special forces, IT special forces. Right. Wherever I've been, it's like when shit goes wrong or someone needs to get something done right away, they always call on me. And they've, I kind of identified with this parable that this Paul Venezia off InfoWorld talked about in his article, or he said, he put this parable to describe the problem. So the passenger train breaks down in the middle of nowhere where a delegation of railroad VIPs on board, including the president of the company. The locomotive simply won't start and everyone is stranded. However, the president knows a passenger on the train was one of the designers of the locomotive and pleads with the man to help fix the problem and get the train back underway. The engineer says, sure, it'll cost you $10,000. So desperate for a solution, the president agrees. The engineer then takes a hammer, walks up to the side of the locomotive, inspects a few specific areas, and suddenly swings the tool against the steel panel, and the locomotive immediately springs to life. The president runs over, and instead of being pleased that the train is running again, he screams, $10,000? Why in the world would I pay you $10,000 just to hit the thing with a hammer? And the engineer replies, I threw in the hit with the hammer for free. Knowing where to hit it cost $10,000.
Yeah, that's true.
I found that exact same experience. Like, people do not want to pay for quality and hard-earned knowledge. Mm-hmm. They'd rather pay for fucking amateurs to grope around and try to, the hard way, reinvent the wheel or slam their head against a wall rather than have a professional in there and just like, okay, here's what you need to do and bang it out really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which is more valuable, having someone do something very rapidly and make it look easy, or hire some amateur to make a easy thing look hard?
So you got to pay the pro a lot. You got to pay the amateur very little.
Well, it's almost like the Scotty principle.
Like, quote him twice as much time, and then they'll look like a genius.
Yes.
It's done immediately.
Yes, because you get nothing but, I think this is a very real phenomenon, that if you are excellent at your job and you're able to quickly and accurately figure things out, people are not going to see the value of your labor. They don't understand that. They don't understand that it took you 5 years of familiarity with this system to be able to be in a position. And they're paying for all of that trial and error and all that sweat to get things done rapidly.
It's R&D cost, right?
Exactly.
It's what IBM pays to research the next database schema or whatever they're doing.
Right.
It's everything that leads up to it. Yeah, companies don't see the value in that. They don't understand.
But on the other hand, there's also a room for kind of a jack of all trades that knows just enough to know the right professional to call in. Because that's another thing. You can get a consult. There's all types of different consultants for all types of different stuff.
Sure.
And if you hire the, you know, screwdriver consultant when it's time to swing a hammer, you are going to spend 4 or 5 times more.
You're
going to
get screwed.
And you're going to get screwed, whether you need it or not.
Yep.
Whereas you get the nail guy and you get hammered. That's a lot more fun. But you see what I'm saying? Like, there's lots of different ways to distinguish yourself. So I guess, what's the optimum career path if you're going to give someone, because you've been in the IT career for 5+ years, probably closer to 10+ years now, right?
It's getting there, yeah.
And I've been in for 10 to 15. Uh-huh. If you're going to give someone advice on how to conduct yourself as an IT professional to maximize your upward mobility, what would it be?
I would say it depends on whether or not you want to escape. Because I find people who do really maximize their skills and can be that guy swinging the hammer for $10,000, we've talked about this before, they can save the money, they can retire early, they can get out of the game. People who just want to coast by will be coasting by for the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. They're the guys who are working until they're 75 and can't ever retire.
Right.
So it depends on what you want to do. I mean, if you want to slack off, sure. Just don't be the guy who swings the hammer for 10 grand. Be the guy who does the bare minimum and surfs the internet all day and whatever you want to do.
Right.
But you'll be doing that for the rest of your life.
Right.
There's no escape there.
On the other hand, I guess my best advice would be if you're in IT field and you want to be the hired gun, then you need to be comfortable with moving jobs and careers frequently.
Oh, yeah.
Because you get in this place and you are the Lord and Savior Within 2 years, you'll be taken for granted. Mm-hmm. And you're not, and when you want to get a bonus commiserate with your extra 2 years, of, they're going to be like, we've been paying you this rate to do the same job. Here's your 3.5%. Be happy. If you want to be that, you have to go, because another company will recognize the fact, like, we don't have that skill set. We need that skill set. We need you. But in 2 to 3 years, they're going to be in the exact same boat where, well, we paid you to do this. Even though you've taken us here, we still paid you at the same rate. So why should we pay you more?
I am living proof that that concept is true, right? I was...
Exactly!
Yes, my exact scenario right there. I was getting paid a certain amount to do my job. I never would have gotten beyond a 3% raise. That's the company motto, is 3% raise. That's all you get. So I decided, I'm going to quit. Right. And I quit, and I moved up to Chicago for 6 months, did some contracting work up there. I came back, I said, I'm still here. I still have the skills that I had 6 months ago. I'm not going to work for you for any less than X.
Right. And they paid
you. And X was literally 50% on top of what I was making.
Uh-huh.
And they paid it because I had the expertise and because they reevaluated how much I was worth at that
point. They went 6 months without that expertise. Exactly. And they saw the actual value of it.
And they tried to replace me with temps and contractors.
And it didn't work.
And it doesn't work because I had the built-in knowledge, the R&D knowledge that I had accrued over the last 4 years of working there.
So maybe how you really get ahead is you go on 6 month sabbaticals.
Hey, it worked.
And then hold up your previous employer for extortion. Like, all these headaches that you've had since I've gone, like all the fires that are on, I can put them out, like, but it's going to cost you.
10,000, I'll swing that hammer.
Why is it? Because, like, I hear about the executives, how they make $300 and $400. 300 or 400 times more than the average line worker.
Oh, okay.
Well, if you got a force multiplier in your company, it's IT. I mean, the reason that United States for the last 30 years has increased its productivity is because of IT and automation, all that kind of stuff. So it's a good bet that the people you got in your company, and I see this all the time. We get a guy in, entry level, he's good, he advances to where he should be getting paid more, and we rather go through the pain of letting him go to another higher player place and start off with another bonehead than retain that knowledge.
Yeah, it's
why does management not see the value of competent, embedded in the system, knows it like the back of their hand professionals?
I don't know, because they're on both sides of this. They when they let someone like that go, they lose the expertise that was built into that person. And then they bring in someone else who likely they're going to pay the same that they paid that guy when he left. But that person doesn't have the expertise.
Right.
And not only does the company lose the expertise and bring in someone without it, but the person who was let go also loses the benefit of having any expertise in that specific job.
It is very mutual.
It's mutually beneficial for that person to stay there. Companies don't see the value of it.
Because
they won't compensate you according to what you should be making with that R&D cost, that built-in knowledge cost.
I never thought of it that way, because the day you leave a company to go someplace else, you are at the max value to that employer, but that employer is at the max value to you.
Both, yes.
Because you've grown organically into that job. Hooks into you, hooks into them.
Yeah. And unless you've done something to royally upset the workflow there, I don't know why they would ever want to let you go.
Right. Well, you guess you want more money. And there's some people just
But they've been investing that money in you the entire time. They've been paying you to learn their systems.
Right.
Why not now pay you the money that they've paid for R&D the whole time, you know? Like, I just don't understand it.
I don't understand why the IT thing is seen as such a cog in a wheel type of system. Mm-hmm. And I understand that you can't let people hold you ransom. Like, and there's no one that's indispensable. Like, that's one thing I preach in my shop, that nobody's irreplaceable. Like,
some people
might,
are.
No. You might
you'll lose a lot
30
of money
to 90
you.
Minutes of month or days of pain, but we will replace you.
It'd be really hard to replace my boss. No, because we've replaced so many people in the meantime that no one has the knowledge that he has in our
systems. But see, what happens in that situation is the new guy comes in and says, this is all bullshit. I need to replace it all. And the other people are like, blank check, do it.
We've spent the last 2.5 years trying to do that.
Really?
With the knowledge that he has, and we still haven't completed
that
it.
That man has got a good line on, you know, job security.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They actually don't like him very much. The people who bought the company out don't like him because he says what's on his mind, and they'll tell him it's bullshit.
Right.
But they can't let him go. He just knows too much.
Wow.
So he's got, yeah, that privilege.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't know, man. They don't understand it.
Yeah, like I said, I've seen that in both ways where, like, I've been there where I've been the Lord and Savior, and I've been the person that's taken for granted, and I kind of feel like I'm kind of in flux there now, that where I'm halfway between, you know, like, people still recognize that I have indispensable knowledge and it keeps their butts out of trouble in, like, areas A, B, and C, but then they think at X, Y, Z, we could do that for cheaper.
Sure.
And I can feel the balance of tension, like, so it's like, I feel like, especially because I'm, like, an IT management, I feel like I'm very much like an NFL coach, where I've got 3 to 5 years where the players listen to me. After that, them and management both tune me out, and I need to be looking for another job.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I hate the fact that IT is such a fucking nomadic existence, but that if you want to maximize your income, maximize your potential, you have to be counting on leaping jobs every 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
Because your existing place ain't going to give you the fucking job, the increase you're looking for, and you deserve.
I mean, I could talk about this stuff for hours, like how IT is just messed up in general, or the perception from the outside of IT. It's messed up, but I think we've talked about it long enough.
Okay.
We both bragged about our expertise long enough. So why don't we talk about geek anti-intellectualism?
That sounds like a lot of thinking.
That's a lot of thinking, man.
Sounds like a lot of nerd talk.
Listeners, if you're not ready for it, tune out. Just tune out. If you are not smart enough to follow us on this next topic, tune out. We don't want you.
All right. So lay on the theory of, because I had some strong initial reactions to this topic.
And I did too. Okay, here it is. There is a growing notion among geeks that college is a waste of time.
That, I agree.
That more can be accomplished by spending your college years starting a business, per se.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a growing notion that experts in general, and especially the ones at these colleges, are outdated, let's say.
So experts in general, you don't need them.
You
Why do I
don't
need an
need
expert?
Them.
I got Wikipedia.
You've got, you've
I got
crowd,
Google search.
You've got crowd wisdom.
Yes.
Is what they're saying.
Right.
What comes along with this is there's a big backlash, I guess, against books lately, where people don't understand the value of books because you have Wikipedia. What do I need to know? What do I need to read a book on World War II? I have Wikipedia.
Yeah, why do I want to listen to one guy tell me his opinion of research when I can read the research myself and peer, like, this crowdsource? Exactly.
Yeah. And I want to call bullshit on this because I can edit Wikipedia.
And you're a fucking idiot.
And I'm a fucking retard. I can go in and I can say that E doesn't equal MC squared.
We can say Batman doesn't grow corn.
Yeah, I can go in and I can change mathematical formulas to suit my needs.
Right.
Even if that doesn't stick, if enough people say that it's one way, it will be that way on Wikipedia.
And if you get into the bowels of Wikipedia, like the political arguments and stuff, it's very much the majority controls fact. And that's scary as hell.
Which they rely on, but for the most part, the majority is stupid. The majority is not
the majority
historians.
Is biased. The majority is, you know, like, ignorant. They have, like, a breadth of knowledge, but very shallow knowledge.
Well, that's part of it, right? That's the backlash against books is something that really irks me, because books allow you the space to deeply cover a topic, to get across topics that ideas that are too complex to express in a tweet, for instance. Mm-hmm. I can't tweet why the sky is blue.
Mm-hmm.
I 140 characters is not gonna do it when it comes to the bonding of chemicals, you know?
Right.
It's just not going to happen. So you need books. You need that format to where you can deeply explore a complex subject. And it's only going to be through the research and the years and years of dedication, the R&D, like we said before, of these experts that can properly explain something so complex to you.
Right.
There's just no way to do that with crowd wisdom, right, because not everyone can be an expert.
Right. But what do you think? Because the guy that wrote this was Larry Sanger, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's the co-founder of Wikipedia. And he's done a lot of, like, agitation against Wikipedia, because, and a lot of people say it's sour grapes. What do you think about the fact that they're saying that, you know, because I saw the same article, and a lot of people accused him of beating on a straw man. That, like, the average nerd is not against anti-intellectualism, but he's, like, trying to say that people are setting up a Wikipedia as the be-end, all-end, like, you know, source of knowledge, and geeks are like, no, but it's compared to, like, if you put Wikipedia against almost any other type of encyclopedia, it's going to be inherently superior. So there, he's like saying, taking that as like, well, that means all geeks are anti-intellectual because there's not a source for expert knowledge to trump the crowdsourcing of knowledge in Wikipedia.
Well, there's the distinction that he draws between anti-intellectualism and anti-authoritarianism, I guess.
Academic. Because like I'm a geek that says, there's very little use for college for a lot of, not like I'm saying, like for engineers, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For physicists?
For physicists? Yeah, absolutely. But for like if you're into, I guess, marketing or journalism or IT work, where maybe we should be treated like an engineering discipline that has degrees and you have to pass certifications and all that kind of stuff. But for the time being, I think that 4 years of college would be much better spending on a open source project, doing actual work, building your portfolio, because what I've found is 3 or 4 years of experience worth of IT work, people stop talking about degrees. It's about your portfolio and what you've done and what you've been able to accomplish. Sure. So yeah, and especially since I've been, as a guy who's hired people straight out of college, the IT and CIS world in general is abysmal. Like, I've gotten people that have graduated from very well-respected IT programs, like at Purdue, and they have not known anything. Like, for example, like my interview questions, like, for the weeding out the complete jackasses are like, describe the phenomenon of garbage in, garbage out. They have no, and they look at me like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, I expect someone with a computer sciences degree to at least be able to talk about the phenomenon of garbage in, garbage out.
Sure, if you give it crap data, you're going to get crap data.
And they're I expect you to be familiar with the archetypal variable names of foo, bar, and baz. Like, if you don't know what the hell that means, you're telling me you've never read a paper on computer science.
Yeah.
Or any sort of white paper on programming in general.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, if you can't tell me, describe in like a couple hundred words what object-oriented programming means, you just you've wasted that money that you've spent on education. And I see 90% of the people graduating from these with degrees are cheaters, plagiarists, and have no idea the understanding of how computer science works at a very fundamental level.
Yeah, I mean.
So, yeah, I'm anti-academic because the academics are failing teaching these kids.
Well, some academics are. I mean, I would not argue that you get a bad education at MIT, for instance. But the garbage in, garbage out principle actually applies in college as well. Some people go there and they don't apply themselves. Of course they're not going to get a good education.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
Nicely done, bringing that full circle, Jim.
But I don't think it's... I don't think you can generalize and say that completely, but for the most part, you're probably right. It's a difference between anti-academics, anti-authoritarianism, and anti-intellectualism.
Right. What do you think about the other, that people consider themselves intellectual, but they still say that learning facts is not necessary? They're like, why would you need to learn a fact when you can just learn it? We can look it up online.
Let me tie that right back to what we just talked about.
Go for it.
The R&D cost. There is a context in which things can be analyzed in a more efficient manner and more accurately analyzed.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, for instance, if you're trying to critically think about whether the Nazis were good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you don't know anything about the context, if you don't have those facts memorized, how are you ever going to judge that?
Right.
It just doesn't follow that having a factually having memorized facts does not add to your ability to analyze a situation. That everything we do is memorized and learned facts.
Well, it's just like they say, science at the forefront of science are standing on the backs of giants.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're not memorizing some facts, then you haven't learned anything, and you that foundation, that giant you're standing on, doesn't exist.
It's a midget, and you don't want to stand on the shoulders of a midget.
Right. Like I can look up any arbitrary date for a battle in a Revolutionary War.
Sure. Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I'm a military historian and I've learned any relationship about all the battles as a whole and what that tells me about military tactics and stuff and like that. And I'm no John Connor. I'm not ready to lead the cyborg resistance.
And he mentions this in the article, the idea that you can look it up.
Right.
And look up enough facts to make an informed opinion about something without actually memorizing any of those facts is insane.
Right.
That is absolutely insane. You have to, at least short term, memorize those facts.
Right.
You're going to take months and months, probably years of research, to actually come to an informed opinion on something. And somewhere along the way, you've memorized a fact. I guarantee it.
Oh, yeah. You can't. That's the thing. And we've proven this on Blue Yonder. When we get interested in a lot of things, I think what we come to appreciate is when we try to take an authoritative take on something that we are interested in but have a very shallow knowledge, we look like idiots.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's one thing to do a podcast like that. But if you're actually fucking in a business or in some sort of industry,
or
and that's the way you
God
live your life.
You're making public policy.
Yeah, and that's the way you look at like knowledge as being like some kind of shallow thing, we're fucked. Because... yeah. You know, real life doesn't let you look up things on Google, you know, when they come at you. And you know, that's part of, I guess, you know, true wisdom is that collection of facts builds the foundation.
Yes.
So then you can, as other information comes in, you can base all of your previous knowledge and continue to grow and learn.
Exactly.
And that's what an expert is. He's seen it all. He's seen, like, he's not going to be stymied when he has an amateur level argument against his position.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be able to destroy it and say, no, that's a side track that we've already been down. We need to keep moving forward.
These people, and I get the feeling that most of these people are just slightly past college age. And that's me, too. I'm not going to pretend that I'm not part of that demographic. But these people really strike me as kids who think they know it all.
Right.
Like, my dad thought I was when I was 17, and I decided I wanted to buy a brand new car.
Right.
Well, you're a fucking idiot, son, but you got to make this mistake because I did too. I've been there. Well, guess what? He had memorized the fact that buying a brand new car when you're 17 is fucking stupid.
Right.
And he has the wisdom to tell me that.
Right.
But I've got to find it out for myself. That's what these people are. They're the little kids who don't understand that they don't know it all.
Right. Oh, I totally agree on that. I totally agree on that.
Okay.
What do you think about the people that say, okay, well, maybe there's some facts about the hard sciences, physics and engineering and math. And but all these people, like, you know, artsy-fartsy, wanting to read literature and study philosophy and history are just pointless facts that you can look up.
Well, I'm not sure what exactly you mean there.
Well, they're saying, like, there's intellectualism. Like, okay, I'll respect Stephen Hawking because he knows a lot about his field.
Mm-hmm.
But some fucking, like, political science major, I'm still going to scorn because he's memorized a bunch of shit about history that I can just look up on Wikipedia.
Yes, but it will take you years to look up everything that he already knows.
Right.
That's the thing. He can process that back knowledge into a viable political or a viable public policy before you can even look up half of Wikipedia article.
Right.
You know,
right.
He understands all this almost intuitively because he has that context.
And that's a problem. We've talked about this a lot with nerd culture is that they don't get some fundamental truths about the human nature.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like universal truths and what the soft sciences, history and philosophy is all about the human condition and human nature. And people get these degrees. Yeah, maybe they might not make as much as a web developer or a network engineer.
Maybe not as in demand.
But they have a grounding on, like, if they've actually done the work and read this literature and read the philosophies and all that stuff, they're going to know a lot more about the human condition. And that's valuable in and of itself in dealing with society and understanding why the world... You see so many fucking nerds espouse this extreme libertarian position. And if you're doing that, I have sympathy with you because that was me 10 years ago. All right?
All right.
But... if you don't understand why the pure libertarian position is wrong, you're no better than the person that espouses a pure communist position or someone that longs for anarchy, pure anarchy, or a benevolent dictatorship. Why doesn't a benevolent dictatorship work? Because people aren't benevolent. You're not going to understand that.
Sure, sure. I think the main problem I have with this particular outlook on intellectualism is that if it takes hold, if enough people start believing this, that college is a waste of time, that these soft sciences or arts, whatever, are a waste of time, we're going to lose that knowledge. We're going to lose the expertise that we do have to just death. I mean, people are who know this stuff are going to start dying off. Nobody's going to take their place.
Right.
And history is doomed to repeat itself, you know? That's what they say, and that's totally true, especially when the knowledge that we've accumulated is not valued.
It's funny because, you know, we both watched Carl Sagan's Cosmos, and at one point he talks about a whole episode about the Library of Alexandria. How that was destroyed through conquest, and he's like, you know, where would we be in science if we hadn't have lost that ancient wisdom? Like... And the so-called ancients were surprisingly sophisticated. We are burning the Library of Alexandria by choice and by, like, taking it for granted. Like, every time we discount an expert, every time we, you know, talk about this crowdsourcing populist bullshit, we are dismantling it brick by brick. And I wonder what 1,000 years from now... like, if we're going to go into a dark ages of our own creation voluntarily. I don't know. I mean, I kind of like post-apocalyptic, you know, ideas about human nature. And
this is a book waiting to happen. Waiting to happen.
Yeah, but, like, it would be kind of fitting that we would voluntarily subject ourselves into a dark age because we do reject intellectualism.
And that would be repeating history.
Yep.
And I don't want to come down on this and say that I think we should invariably listen to anyone who espouses to be an expert on anything.
Right, like any authority automatically must be obeyed and listened as if it's fact. You can still
question
it. I largely
disagree with that, yeah.
Right, right.
I think some people, and I think we need a pool of experts to sort of corral the people who are espousing to be experts. The ones who can actually say... 9 out of 10 experts agree that this other expert is a fucking idiot.
Right.
He's not really an expert.
Right.
So I think we need, if anything, more people becoming experts in more things.
Right.
Like, I think we should, I almost think we shouldn't leave it up to crowdsourcing. Crowdsourcing is great for jobs that need to be done, like Mechanical Turk with Amazon. That's fantastic. Right. Like, taking surveys, wonderful. You can get a general thinking on the idea, but for specific knowledge, for real knowledge, I think you need experts.
And I think that a lot of this is internet warriorism because you see, like, you see fucking blowhards on message boards all the time quoting facts and stuff and dispute. And you can tell they're just one step ahead of each other on Google search.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's like, I sometimes think that, like, this is a manufactured problem because in the real world, when you're sitting in, like, policy rooms and boardrooms and stuff, their knowledge is valuable.
Sure. But
on the other hand, we also see in the real world, I mean, maybe I'm just cynical because I just got done finishing watching The Wire, and I see that, and this kind of rings true to me in this fictional form, that... people that are really good and challenge the system or challenge authority are discarded. mm-hmm. you know, and like this institution protects itself. And I see very real, like that's the reason our newspaper industry is in such bad shape, because we've laid off all the people with yeah. like decades of experience living in our cities that know the politicians and know the networks mm-hmm. and can blow the lid on things and whistleblow. We're sending these people packing.
Yeah. And I actually not too long ago read an article about how, I think it was a blog post about how, replacing journalists, true journalists mm-hmm. with bloggers is not going to work.
No.
We are ditching the 100+ years of institutionalized knowledge that we have on how to properly conduct ourselves in journalism, properly right. report a story and find out facts. We're discarding it in favor of random blogger X.
Right, with shallow takes on things.
Yeah, with that incomplete contextual knowledge that you can only get as an expert.
I can't remember what show we talked about this, that like, yes, traditional journalism is a dinosaur and
sure.
its business model is bad, but it's a damn shame that we're losing all of this hardcore journalism
yeah.
expertise.
The
we're
medium,
throwing away
yeah.
100 years of intellectual wisdom, mm-hmm. Of institutional wisdom
yes.
in favor of, oh, the internet's awesome and we don't have to pay for it like we do paper.
That's the thing. The medium is right. a dinosaur. The journalists are
not.
The knowledge
still doing
is
work.
Not.
Yep, yep.
Bring them into the internet age. Just transfer their knowledge. Why don't we do that?
I don't know, because history is doomed to repeat itself.
Because we'd rather pay a college kid X $4 an hour to do it.
All right. That's enough smart talk.
That is. Our listeners have all tuned out by now.
I feel
now.
Like I want to get like
they're
a
all surfing Wikipedia.
Yeah. They're like, you know, doing the, what's that, the thing on, fuck, the, shit, they got it made king of the hill. I feel like I'm into intellectualism in motion. Idiotocracy.
Yeah, Daniel. Daniel's.
What?
Craig?
What?
Daniel?
Ferguson?
No, I know his name. Never mind.
I don't care. But, like, I feel like they're off the watch, like, ow, you punch my nuts. Or
yeah,
you
know, ow, my balls.
Ow, my balls.
Yeah.
Or they're baiting. They're off
Go
the corner
away,
baiting. Shall we initiate the feedback sequence?
Let's do it.
We have some feedback from our old enemies, Personal Arrogance.
Our frenemies.
Our frenemies. We did a podcast segment on Star Wars vs. Star Trek time travel, and they were mad. Jesse said, how do you guys do a podcast on time travel? And not even once mention the best time travel movie of all time, Time Cop, starring one Jean-Claude Van Damme. For shame, that is all. You got us.
Yeah.
I can't believe we did not cover in depth that scholarly take on time travel with a great badass, tier two badass. But
yeah,
still, all-time great. He's on the, not the Mount Rushmore. What's the Mount Lessmore version of badasses?
Mount Rush Less.
He's there with the Steven Seagal.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The Chuck Norris.
Yeah, yeah. It's Mount Mush Less. I like that better. Rush Less.
And this is just after I watched The Quest. Have you seen The Quest?
I haven't seen The Quest.
Man, I remember when that came out. It was ages ago. But The Quest is exactly like Bloodsport.
Really?
Like, no joke, it is a copy, one-to-one of Bloodsport. He was just like, all right, this is my last hurrah. It's the mid-90s. I'm going out now. I need to just...
Well, had John Clan... Had the...
Yeah. Yeah.
Had JCVD
dude.
Get out.
Yeah, man.
Wow.
And it was an exact clone of Bloodsport.
Wow.
But I'm sorry, we missed Time Cop. But honestly, I'm not familiar enough with the lore of Time Cop to tell you how it relates to time travel exactly. Like, I couldn't tell you what paradoxes there are.
Uh-huh.
But I'm sure they're there.
Right.
I think he impregnates his mother or something at some point.
We got some backhanded compliment for episode 67, Teledildonics, which I actually enjoyed. Because
I did too.
We put that in the cat, like the juice cistern 4 or 5 weeks, and then like I forgot all about it. I was writing the transcript as I was listening to it, and I was entertained thoroughly because I'd forgotten about it. We were drunk when we were casting anyway.
As usual.
And Darth Paxis was equally impressed. He said, I'll be honest and say I wasn't expecting much from this episode. That's what we want from you listeners. Lower your expectations, lower your guards, let us sneak in there and then pow! But that he was pleasantly surprised. You guys did a good job with the evergreen. Teledildonics indeed. Indeed.
Indeed.
Thank you for listening, Darth Paxis. It wouldn't be a feedback segment if we didn't cover the Dawn.
That's true. Although he's requesting something a little odd here. I don't know if I can actually do it.
Well, he wants it in a Polish accent. What the? A Polish accent. What Polish? The heck is a Polish accent? Is that like someone that's huffed like nail polish remover?
I think so, yeah.
All right, so.
No, Polish accent? I think it's Russian without the vodka, right?
Right.
So I don't think either of us can do that tonight. No, honestly, I can't. I don't even know what Polish sounds like.
Yeah, like I want to do like a Russian Jewish accent.
If you can do it, do it, because I'm sure he'll love it.
There are some days when I see old person. That's not right. That's not right. Right?
I don't know, man. Maybe we read this one straight.
All right, here's my Polish accent, because I'm at least as much Polish as I am German.
Which is to say 0%.
No, that's not true. I'm 50% German.
So you're 50% German and 50% Polish?
No, like 25% Polack.
You like, said you're at least as much as you are German.
Okay. I'm at most as much.
Okay.
So there are some days where I see an old person driving their electronic wheelchair down the road as if it's their car. They're taking up an entire lane, slowing down traffic. It's not safe, and I'm not sure if it's legal, too. People need to keep an eye out on Grandpa and make sure he doesn't leave the house. Stop.
What? Where the fuck does he live?
Dude, come on.
No, I've never seen an old
back in our hometown, it wasn't a wheelchair, but this old dude used to ride a 10-speed bicycle.
I do that?
Down State Road 144. Huffing up the hills at 3 miles an hour and the traffic's going 55.
In the middle of a lane?
In the middle of a lane.
It's a one lane.
There's some asshole out here on Highway 40, US 40, the national road. It's got like mark
damn near across the country.
It's a huge fucking 4-lane highway and there's a giant breakdown lane, right? So if you wanted to ride a bicycle safely. Mm-hmm. There's a huge fucking breakdown lane that's not in the lane of traffic. This asshole rides in the middle of the slow lane, defiantly.
He was going slow, right?
I've seen people on drunk scooters. I've seen people on the hover rounds.
I've never seen that.
I've seen this on highways, man.
That blows my mind.
I've never seen it on like a 465 or an interstate. Because, like, have you noticed that, like, when you get on 465 or 70, there's, like, a sign that says, look, assholes, this is for big people vehicles. This is not for skateboards. This is not for bicycles. This is not for go-karts. This is for, you got to be able to read the hoof it if you're on this road. Have you seen those things?
No,
there's like a little red caution sign.
Mm-mm.
Or it's a white sign with red letters saying like no pedestrians, no unmotorized vehicles, blah, blah, blah.
No.
Yeah, if you're taking a hover round, if you're Stephen Hawking and you're on any sort of interstate or state highway, I don't know.
Either open a fucking wormhole.
Yeah.
Or get the fuck off the road.
Get the fuck out of the road. It's just not safe, man.
Yeah.
Because I'll run your ass over and not even try. I won't take pleasure out of it. I'll just be cruising around, listening to a podcast, I'll be listening to Power Play.
Sure.
And I'll be laughing so hard that I don't, and there'll be tears in my eyes, I'll be blurry, and I don't see this thing moving 5 miles an hour and I'm moving 7. I'll run over Grandpa. I don't want to run over your Grandpa, man. Keep Grandpa off the streets.
I've never seen Grandpa on the road.
I've seen Grandpa. That's all I'm saying. Grandpa's on the road all the time. He needs to get the fuck out of the road. And Grandma, too. I'm equal opportunity.
Fine. Get him out of the road. Get everyone off the road, as far as I'm concerned.
Yep.
All right. Anyway, is that about do it for the show?
You got any good Polish jokes?
No.
I don't really either. I used to have one.
Something about an airplane and they jump out. I don't know, man.
I got one that, like, so there's a contractor talking to...
We should probably save these, actually, for the Blue Yonder public outline show. Did you see the comments in there?
No.
They want us to do some racist jokes. We should save the Polack jokes for the...
Well, we've actually got traffic on that?
Oh, yeah, man.
Oh, my God.
The listeners love it. Yeah, if you guys go to our forums and check out episode 66, I think it was.
Yeah.
We'll post a link to it in this episode, too. But you can actually go in and edit a Google Doc to make a public outline.
For
one of our shows.
All right.
Eventually, we're going to take this show and just run with it. Whatever the audience wants to hear.
Add the outline. What episode number you want us to do? Do you want us to save it to a 100? Do you want us to do it like a 75?
No, no, that's our discretion. They get everything else.
Oh, they can.
We get to decide if we ever do.
We can't. We can't stop them from putting suggestions in there. I'm just saying.
We can't stop you from putting anything. Put anything you want in there.
Wow, that is a bald move, Jim.
Right? I know. I like it.
Other ways they can leave feedback.
Forums.baldmove.com.
If you want to have a conversation with us and get, like, you know, we're tracking, like, all the PSN, the PSN network hacks.
All the hacks.
That's something we want to talk about maybe next week is, like, the why all the hacker world has gone batshit insane.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's, like, you know, like, DEFCON 5 on the hacker scale right now.
Yeah.
So we're covering that, and we got a lot of cool stuff going on our forums. BlueYonder@baldmove.com if you want to leave us overt feedback to be read on the show,
just like we did.
If you want to show us love, go to facebook.com/baldmove and like our page. We love seeing that like counter go up.
Yeah, like it, or share the link that we post in to our podcast.
Yeah, if
like,
you're already like a fan, yeah. If you're already a fan and you see us a cast where we're behaving ourselves, we're not talking about, like, you know, we're not telling Pollock jokes or being anti-intellectual, go ahead and share that link out with all your friends and family. We'd love that.
Definitely.
If you're on Twitter at baldmove.com, follow
us.
We'd love that.
Yeah, and retweet the stuff that we tweet.
If you hit our iTunes link, give us a 5-star review, give us a text review. We'd like to see that. And, the other thing you could do is subscribe to our cast. We don't care if you listen to it, but if you're on iTunes, subscribe. We want to get a subscription.
We're all about the artificial numbers here.
Yeah.
We want to inflate our listener count.
We like to juke the stats. We're like the chief of police of Baltimore, Maryland.
Take those 13 murders and put them somewhere else.
Yeah, turn them into aggravated assault. Take those rapes and turn them into batteries. We're all about pumping up. So, like, subscribe to that stuff. I don't care if you listen to it. Your iTunes will download it, and it'll turn our turnstiles and it'll make our hearts glow. That's what makes Blue Yonder. It's malt liquor and positive feedback from y'all.
Wonderful. All right. That's it. This podcast is over. I'm cutting you off.
Finn.
With that said, until next time, I'm Jim Jones.
Ooh, and I'm Aaron Hubbard. Ciao.